Mitzvah Reish Tzadihei 295 Shelo Lazos Davar Sheis Chalal Boshem Shamayim Bein Bnei Adam. Not to do something that will cause the desecration of the name of God amongst individuals. Shenimnanu Michilul Hashem. We all throw around the term Chil Hashem all the time, but we're trying to define it more precisely now, exactly what the term Chil Hashem actually means. Huefech Kiddush Hashem. He's telling you this because here it really doesn't make sense, the order that we have in our editions of the Sefer HaChinuch, because obviously this is a lo sase in the original order of the Sefer HaChinuch. The next mitzvah, Reish Tzadivav, was what we call Reish Tzadivav, was way before this mitzvah, Reish Tzadihei, which is talking about actively the requirement of Kiddush Hashem, of sanctifying the name of God. So here, what he says here sort of assumes that you read the other one already, but we're going to work with what we have. Previously in this sedra that we haven't learned yet in our order, you shall not desecrate my holy name. What does that mean? Who's the matik? The translator. Doesn't mean the copier, means the translator. His job was to copy the Rambam's words from Arabic into Hebrew. This sin of desecrating the name of God is split into three parts. One is on general, and one is on two. I'm sorry, two are in for the general Jewish people, and one is on the individual. Again, we'll go into this more in detail in the next mitzvah. But you have a situation which is called Shas Hashmad, which is that the government is persecuting the Jewish religion. Then if somebody commands the Jew, a goy, hopefully, commands the Jew, I mean, not he's hopefully going to do it, but hopefully okay. not a so-called self-hating Jew. So if he commands the Jew to violate any mitzvah in the Torah, no matter how light, no matter how seemingly not severe. And even if it's not a time of governmental persecution of the Jewish religion, and the goy asks the Jew to violate either murder or immoral sexual relations or worshipping idols, so the person is required to offer up one's life and thereby be killed rather than violate these mitzvos. But if you didn't do this, if you didn't live up to the standard and you in fact engaged in the sin instead of allowing yourself to be killed, then that is a desecration of the name of God, a public desecration. If there are 10 Jews present, the Avra al Omro velo sechalu Hashem kachi. You violated what it says in the Torah. You shall not desecrate my holy name. The cheto otzum meod, and your sin is very, very great. This is the number one idea in the Torah that within the Jewish people, you were saying yesterday, we have both communal obligations which reflect our relationship to God also, which are that we're supposed to encourage our fellow Jews to love and fear God. And if we do something that indicates to our fellow Jews that this is not what we are focused on, then that is a major desecration of the name of God. And Sefer Chinuch points out that the sin is a very great, it's otzum, it's enormous. Because what is Shnei Yoma when it's talking about the different ways that one can achieve kapara of atonement? It says there's certain sins that you have to receive atonement immediately if you do tshuva. There's certain sins that wait till Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur atones for the sin. There's certain sins that, and it says for Chil Hashem, though, not even tshuva, not even Yom Kippur, not even any of these things atones for the sin. The only sin thing that atones for the sin of desecrating the name of God is
death.
Until the day you die, you will have this sin hanging over you, and it's only your death that fully atones for the sin, even with tshuva, even with Yom Kippur preceding. So if this is such a terrible sin, one should assume that one would receive the penalty of lashes for violating it. Omnam eino loke bavor shehu anus. But nevertheless, you do not receive the penalty of lashes because when push comes to shove, you're considered to be coerced into performing this sin.
Wait, what if you what if you do the sin without being coerced? I mean, then you know.
No, of course, then you're chayav. You're chayav misa, whatever.
Right.
If you just stam worship idols,
yeah,
you stam gili aros.
Without any encouragement from the government or whatever it might be, you know. So there's that. Then
no, no, we're talking about a situation when someone said, "Do this or I'll shoot you."
Okay.
So if you're under such duress. Mm-hmm. So you're required to give up your life, but if you don't, you don't receive any earthly penalty because lemaisa you committed the sin under duress.
Yeah, it's worse than just shoot you. I read the history books. There are other circumstances where they would torture people to commit sins.
Right, that was just an example. There are other ways of being put to death besides shooting. But yeah. If you say, do this sin or I'll torture you, so you're required to submit to the torture. But, you know, if you don't live up to that standard, so
you
don't get...
Biggies.
Right, three
not
biggies.
Not eating pork.
Unless it's shas
public.
Shmad.
What's the time of shmad?
Any time of governmental persecution of the Jewish religion.
Well, many Jews think every time is a prayer.
No, but the government says, Jews, you are not allowed to observe X mitzvah any time that happens. They say it at Molly, so then you're not allowed. That's
Jewish that's a shmad. In jail. Some people say that's.
So, it's not that they outlaw shchita per se. It's that they require you to stun the animals before shchita, which is not allowed. That's this whole in the Tshuva's Sri De'esh by Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, who went through a whole journey in life. He from Lithuania to Germany to Switzerland. That's where he ended up in his at the end of his life. So a lot of his Tshuva's in Yerodea. Like half the volume of Yoredeya is devoted to this discussion of whether you're allowed to stun animals before Shchita, and obviously we assume that you're not allowed to stun animals before Shchita. So Switzerland was not a good example because they do not disallow Shchita. They say, you want to do Shchita? You want to kill the animal by having a Jewish person take a very sharp, smooth light knife and cut the neck? So that's allowed. We just require you to stun the animal first. And they're saying, Jews, you are not allowed to eat meat. You know,
the actual Shuvah Sri De'esh was something much more through it. It was during the Nazi era. Where the question was, in fact, where the Nazis prohibited shchita, unless,
well,
of course, you'd... You know,
I think that was shas hashmad. But
right, so that was the different... You know,
right, so that's not... They allow the Jews to eat meat. The Swiss shochtim go to France, which is not that far. It's probably closer than here to Mifflintown, Pennsylvania, wherever wherever shochtim need to go to shecht nowadays. So it's not such a big ordeal. They just have to go out of the country in order to shechta, and they import the meat, and the Jewish community has meat to eat. And it's not, again, I don't think that the Jewish religion or the Jewish religious practices per se were assert like that. So Switzerland was not a good example, but there might be other countries where they say you are not allowed to slaughter animals by cutting their necks, and you know, it has to be done a different way. So that might be more inclined to be considered just a shmad. But again, you have this instance where it's very not clear that they're targeting the Jewish religion or any religion in particular at all, that would be shmad. But here, I think that the evidence doesn't stack up in order to consider these things shas shmad. But again, maybe you know, if things were worse, so then it would potentially be considered to be shas shmad. One would be required to give up one's life for any mitzvah whatsoever. Okay. Levishein levesden shiakaimu gvul malchus o harag ella bemezid birtson beedim vahasra. That you have to have edim and hasra. You have to have witnesses say, you know, you're about to do this, and the person has to say, yes, I'm about to do this, and so that means you do a bemezid. That means you do it on purpose. But if you're being forced into it, so even though you're required to give up your life, nevertheless, you're being forced into this sin. And you do not receive any earthly penalty whatsoever. V'loshen zifra benosin mizar la molech v'samti anias panai ba'ishahu. That if you kill your child in order to worship the deity molech, v'samti anias panai ba'ishahu, I shall place my face towards this person. Amr zichron l'bracha hu v'lo anus v'lo shogig v'lo muta. Has to be somebody who's actually doing it, ha'ishahu, this particular person who's going ahead and doing this sin, and not someone who is coerced, not someone who's doing it accidentally, and not someone who is misinformed about the parameters of this prohibition. V'chvar hisbar lach she'oved avodah zarah be'ones eino chayev karis, v'chol shegen misas bezdin, that if you worship idols with under coercion, that you're not chayev karis, and certainly not the penalty of death. Nevertheless, you violated the mitzvah of Chil Hashem, the prohibition of desecrating the name of God. The chilek hasheni haklali shiyase adam afeira otava ba velo arevos avayichavein befulasu lahachis. If you commit a sin, it was called lahachis. Bezek kemo kein mechal shem shemaim veyilke. So such a situation is not under coercion, so you would receive the penalty for malka. So what's an example of this? Somebody gives you, you have in front of you, two steaks that are equally delicious looking, equally, you know, have a high USDA grade, and you have two of them in front of you, and one is kosher, and one is not kosher. So you take a look at both the steaks, and you think, Jews, fellow Jews, I am rebelling against you, I'm rebelling against God, I'm taking the non-kosher steak. That's what we call an avera lehachis. However, if you have the two steaks in front of you, and you say, the kosher one looks okay, but the non-kosher one, that's you know, USDA prime, it has great marbling, it's much more delicious, and it was prepared sous vide and not overdone under the broiler, so this is the steak that I really want to eat. So even though most, you know, religious Jews would choose the other steak, and they could be mevater and all these things, nevertheless, that would not be considered an avera b'mezid. That would be considered to be an avera l'te. I mean, it would be mezid, but it wouldn't be lahachis. It would be l'te avon. Mm-hmm. It would be to. That's even says in the Gemara in Chulin that a person is allowed to be a shochet if he eats non kosher meat l'te avon. That if he has in front of him two equally good pieces of meat, one's kosher, one's not kosher, and he's going to choose the kosher. So then he's allowed to be a shochet, because if he has a choice, he's holding a knife right here, and he has a choice. Either I'm going to kill this animal by stabbing it to death with a knife, or I'm going to shecht it in the kosher way by cutting the neck in the ritually prescribed manner, so that such a person is, technically speaking, allowed to be a shochet. I mean, never in a million years would we allow someone like this to be a shochet nowadays. Nowadays we're very makbid on the Yira Shemayim of Shochtim, that they have to be of a certain caliber. But nevertheless, we treat in Avera L'Teyavon for one's desires with much less severely than we do in Avera L'Hachis, in order simply to arouse the animosity of the fellow Jews and of God. Ulfigach amar velo sishavu vishmila shakar vechil alto Hashem Elokecha shezeira hachasa bezeh hadavar ve'ein arevos gashmi bezeh. So it says that one of the examples of Echil Hashem is swearing falsely in the name of God. So nobody has a desire to swear falsely in the name of God. So it's something that's done purely to anger God, so to speak. So therefore, it would be an avera lahachis. So something along those lines, and other sins as well, would be an avera lahachis.
So in other words, if you...
And there's something that's not for all Jewish people equally, but rather the exact circumstances under which one would violate Chil Hashem depends on the individual. What is that? Shiase ish mefursam bigmilus chasadim u'maisim tovim maise echad shiro lerabim shehu avera. The subjective type of Chil Hashem. That somebody who's assumed to be somebody who's very generous and does ben adam lechavero mitzvos very well and does good deeds all the time. So if he does something that appears to people like it's not proper conduct for someone of his or her stature, then that would also be achil Hashem. That's what we call colloquially more achil Hashem. Uchgona maisehu eino roi lichmoh isha chosid hu shiyasehu afapishu maisehetra. Even if the thing is permissible, if it's viewed by people as not quite of the caliber of this person, that is also a desecration of the name of God. Yeah,
like a really important rabbi walking around the street in Bermuda shorts.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
going to a bar, right?
Yeah.
Right. Going into a bar.
Yeah, exactly. Even though, right, so a bar, we have, you're not allowed, there's a rule that, you know, we all know that all beer is kosher, right? Unflavored beer. So beer is kosher. But there's a rule that, and whiskey and all these things we have at our Kiddush, we know that it doesn't need to be kosher in the same way that, for example, wine needs to be kosher. So beer and liquor, so in Halacha it says that it's only kosher once it's taken out of the place where it's being sold.
Ah.
Okay, so you're not allowed to go into a bar and drink beer or liquor.
Hey, but that's mechaber. I thought that they...
Oh, I'll get there in a second, yeah. So Ramah says, well, maybe this only applies to date beer, because that's the stam beer that was in the times of the Gemara. But nowadays, it doesn't apply to grain beer, which is what we have nowadays. The prohibition was never formulated regarding that. So therefore, one would technically be allowed to go into a geisha bar and drink anything but date beer, and obviously wine, if that's applied to that.
What's the distinction between date and grain beer? I
mean, nothing. Okay, nothing. Sorry. The distinction is only that the that's like what they had in those days, right. So that's what they formulated the prohibition. But that's not... Right, so the Mechaber is not like that. The Mechaber,
Ashkenazim were thirsty, you know.
Right, so so I guess they were more separate from the Goyish society in those days. Wow. So they felt also that they could rely on these leniencies, and when they were famished and they had were wandering on business in a different town, they could go into a tavern and have a cup of beer.
Yeah, but the only prohibition is to drink with the Goy.
That's different. No, you're allowed to, even if you're by yourself, you're not allowed to drink in a non-Jewish establishment that serves alcoholic beverages.
Right. That's
right. But even if no one else is there.
Does anybody else, do we hold by this now? Yeah.
So some people rely on the leniency of the Rama. If you're going out to a bar with work, so if you rely on the leniency of the Rama. But the post can point out that it's not necessarily proper to rely on this leniency of the Rama nowadays. Because it's much more dangerous, since Jews are much more involved in non-Jewish society, that it's going to be, you're going to get the problems if you end up drinking at a non-Jewish bar.
Just parenthetically, I mean, this whole thing about going out with work buddies.
Yeah.
I mean, you're already feeling uncomfortable enough because they're eating and you're not. So, I mean, so the beer, you're still, there's still...
There's still camaraderie if you're all drinking beer together. Maybe nobody's eating at all.
So is there a prohibition of drinking with the goyim? Like, this is an important thing for work, actually.
Yeah.
There is another thing that if you're going to a party, even if it's not in a place where alcoholic beverages are sold, so if most of the party is not Jewish, so then there's a problem with drinking as
right,
well. That's a different thing.
That's what happened to me.
Good. So the question is, so nowadays if somebody with a beard and payas goes into a bar and is drinking beer with his non-Jewish coworkers, somebody says, no, it's us there. He says, no, what do you mean? I'm relying on the opinion of the Rama that I'm allowed to drink the grain beer. I'm not drinking any date beer.
So cut off your payas then, right?
So that's if somebody's in such a situation, so that's a shayla of a chil Hashem also. I mean, we can come up with a ton of examples of what could be considered a chil Hashem.
This is why you should be modern Orthodox and not look too from. So you don't these things don't apply to you so much. Right?
Well, you have certain things if you just have the yarmulke on, so they're going to look. It's not going to be right anyway. What's an example of chil Hashem? Kigon ana Rav said the shakilna bisra mi beit habacha v'lo yahivna dami la'altar. Says I buy meat and I don't pay the butcher immediately. I ask for credit. Because if it's in a place where credit is not normal and he extends me credit just because I'm a big rabbi, so he might think, maybe he's not really going to pay back. Maybe other people watching will think, maybe he's really going to steal it. So if that's the case, so maybe stealing isn't so bad because this great rabbi is doing it. So maybe the people are going to be mezalzel in paying people immediately. If everybody pays with credit cards in that town, so it's not a problem because you pay with credit cards. That's for sure not an issue at all. Reploni Amar Kigonana Dim Sagina Arbaamos Velo Torah Uvelo Tfilin. Like me, who goes 4 cubits without obviously being at least engaged somehow in the study of Torah and without wearing tefillin. It's obviously in the times where people used to wear tefillin all day long. So if he went 4 amos without tefillin, or without learning, so people might think, oh, this great rabbi isn't wearing tefillin all the time, and he's not 4 amos, not so far. It's a few feet. But nevertheless, since people might learn that they could relax in their observance of these mitzvahs if they see this great rabbi not doing it. So he says, even though he's very weak, and he doesn't really have the energy to learn, he has to push himself extra, lest it become a chilul Hashem.
You could just mention what currently the laws are regarding proper conduct when you are wearing tefillin. Occasionally, I see in the morning minyanim people hanging around, talking about various things, wearing towels and tefillin, and not talking about Torah, let's put it that way.
You don't have to be discussing. I mean, people used to wear tefillin all day long. They used to go about their business. So they used to conduct, their stock trading and their carpentry and whatever business they were in wearing tefillin. So you don't need
to
be.
Used
to
when?
Because
2,000 years ago?
1,500
years ago?
Yeah.
They were a lot smaller, yeah. But So you're not allowed to talk about things that are avarice. Certainly not, you know, things
salt.
With innuendo or rude, or, you know, like you said, that's for sure not, obviously, yeah. And so, I don't know.
We're much more stringent now. I mean, why we only restrict wearing fill-in.
Because, right, part of the reason, besides the impracticality, especially because fill-in are bigger nowadays, of wearing them all day long. And because, right, and it creates a lot of difficulties. But part of the reason is because that when you're wearing tefillin, you're not supposed to have any lustful thoughts at all. You're not supposed to pass gas, all these different rules. So you try to limit the amount of time that you wear them in order not to be nichshal in these things, or at least as little as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But, you know, there's some people who wear tefillin more. Rav Scheinberg, famously, even nowadays, used to wear tefillin all day long. You can see him. He used to try to cover them. You know, he would pretty successfully. He would, you know, you put the shel yad like high up, and you don't wind the strap all the way down to your finger. You just, you know, after davening, you take the strap and you just wind it around your upper arm, and or not upper arm, but like a little past the elbow, whatever. And then you have a hat, and you put the hat forward on your head so it covers the tefillin. And then sometimes you just see like little straps poking out under the hat. So that's what you see pictures of Rav Scheinberg. Sometimes you. This happened more than once, by the way, that there was somebody who decided that, no, I could do it, so I should wear tefillin all day long, like the real halacha. They're supposed to wear tefillin all day long. So they brought him to Rav Scheinberg, and Rav Scheinberg said, I've heard this story that happened personally to more than one person. And he said, you know, they said, Rebbe, you know, should I wear tefillin all day long? He says, no, be normal. Just do like everyone else. You should, like...
Don't adopt my posture unless you have my stature.
I like it. Okay. Very good.
Well, he was being polite. He didn't.
Right. So nowadays, if a rabbi goes 4 cubits without tefillin, so then it's okay. But it's important to point out that the subjective Chil Hashem applies only to something that is either morally neutral, halachically neutral, or something that's forbidden according to halacha, which is obviously chil Hashem if a great Jewish person publicly does not observe these things. But if something is, and it should go without saying, that if something is against halacha and it's viewed by the non-Jewish world as being okay, and like, you know, if a Jew says, if a goy walks into a shul and sees that the women are separate from the men, now, what is this? You have separate the men from the women? How could this be? What, the Jews are such backwards people that they separate the men from the women in their places of worship? So obviously that's not a Chil Hashem. Or if other Jews, you know, non-observant Jews say, oh, how could the Orthodox Jews do such a thing? And it's in consonance with halacha, so that obviously is not a Chil Hashem. Adrabba, it's a Kiddush Hashem that we continue with the ways of the Torah, even if they face some societal opposition. But if something is neutral in halacha, you know, like we were talking about before, we mentioned that while it's forbidden to steal from a non-Jew, if a non-Jew makes a mistake of their own accord, so you're not required to inform the non-Jew of this mistake, like gives you the wrong change or something like that. However, it's recommended that you make a Kiddush Hashem, and you, because morally, it's halachically neutral. It's not usher to give it back to the non-Jew, and it's not required either. It's neutral. So if they will view it positively, so that's a Kiddush Hashem. That's a Kiddush Hashem. But if something is against halacha, then you're not allowed to do it, obviously, even if it will result in non-Jews or non-observant Jews or some group of people thinking of the Jews more positively if you do it. One of my rebbeim said, in Israel, living in Israel for a very long time, since the 50s, I think, he said his father was a major rav in the Bronx in the early part of the 20th century. His name was Rabbi Zalman Reichman. Not related, I don't think, to the Reichman at Rabbi Reichman at YU. And he always quoted his father that he used to make fun of his congregants who used to say that Rabbi, what's it with all these people, these immigrants coming from Europe? Like, they go in the subway and they have payas and they have tzitzis hanging out. That's a Chil Hashem. Like, What? Like, no. that's exactly the point that I'm trying to make right now. That's obviously not a Chil Hashem, that's a Kiddush Hashem, assuming that they behave in a manner that's befitting the tzitzis hanging out in the payas. You say, oh, Rabbi, I went to a Yankees game the other day, and I saw so many yarmulkes in the audience. That's a Kiddush Hashem. That's ridiculous. That's obviously that's not a Kiddush Hashem either. But the point is that his father used to make fun of this, that people have a totally warped perception into certain circumstances as to what constitutes a Kiddush Hashem and what constitutes a Chil Hashem. That has to be, again, in consonance with halacha, or at the very least halachically neutral, in order to be considered a Kiddush or Chil Hashem. Fine. Uchvar nichbal lav zev yomer velo sechal ela shem elokecho ani Hashem adkan. So it says that you individually thou shalt not desecrate the name of thy God. I am the Lord. And that's the end of the lashon of the Gemara. I'm sorry, the lashon of the Rambam. Shorish mitzvah zo k'sas dineh v'chol inaneh k'minhogi k'sav di mitzvah k'dash Hashem asei vav b'seder zai. I wrote in the mitzvah that we're about to do now, which is the mitzvahs asei of Kiddush Hashem. Should go without saying, by the way, also that groups of people defrauding the government of money is a chilul Hashem and should not be done, even if it were mutter, which is not al-pi halacha, but even if it were mutter al-pi halacha, it's at the worst halachically neutral, and should not be done if it's going to cause a massive chil Hashem. That's just the most recent example that we all know about of something that was a major chil Hashem, according to the correct definition of the term.
Yeah, it's very interesting how the God picks up on everything that you do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It appears in newspapers.
Radar.
Right away. Mm-hmm. Goy could do most terrible things. It's not going to appear. But if a Jew...
Well, sometimes it will. But,
yeah. Yeah. But if a Jew does stuff out of the line,
mm-hmm.
it will be published in all newspapers.
Mm-hmm. And that's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it should be.
I don't know what it should be, but that's what
happens. Well, I would rather...
Man bites dog. Okay, that's when a Jew does something.
I would rather that the newspaper is not publish this, obviously, but that's important, just a lesson.
It's a preventive. Beware.
Right, beware, that Jews have to maintain a much higher standard of behavior, which is something that is unfortunately lacking by certain people. Yeah,
they are just like everybody else. They're not prosecuted, and they think
right.
they're so comfortable here.
Right.
Well, they act like everybody else.
And it's not true at all. There is very like it's all going down like this, down the,
mm-hmm.
the slope, the downward slope, and they don't realize that they and there are from Jews who do this, and they should realize.
They should, but it's
not from Jews. Don't
sins are often very tempting, so people don't think clearly.
You don't want the papers to ignore if something goes on in Lakewood like that.
No, he said that.
What do you mean? Of course I do.
Yeah. It would be easier.
I would rather... No.
They should show more lashon hara, right? Yeah,
I would rather... Listen, I do not endorse, obviously, quite the opposite, this behavior in any way. However, I think... to avoid the Chil Hashem aspect of it by the newspaper is not publishing it. Again, I have no control over it. They're going to publish anyway. But if they would ask me the Shaila, the New York Times would ask me the Shaila, oh, we have this juicy story about this bunch of people in Lakewood, including a famous rabbi, who have been defrauding the government. Should we publish the story or not? I would obviously tell them not to. I don't understand. How is that?
What would you say?
Yeah.
They publish it for two reasons. First of all, they know that if Jews do these things, they will have readership who is going to follow it, so there is a market for it. So obviously
sure.
It's anti-Semitism, because there is more anti-Semitism among population, and the press is just a catalyst. Just they know that there is a market to sell this to the population, right? And the other one is that the press nowadays, of course, it's their own agenda. They're not really doing the news like before. But yeah, I mean, there is obviously the market. If the press publishes it, people consume it. That means that there is lots of anti-Semitism in the country.
Well, of course, to be fair about that, the press also jumps on any story involving like a minister or a priest.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
they're
anti-religious. So it's not you. Right? Also, again, it's like you know, dog bites man is not a story.
Right.
When somebody does something which you would not expect, all of a sudden that's newsworthy. You know.
And so,
right. So
Jew or
again,
not
it,
well, yeah, the minister,
minister
is
a rabbi.
There's a difference between the minister and the Jew.
Yeah.
Is a minister is a official religious figure. A Jew is not an.
But there was a rabbi involved in this.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Like, they published a Jew in the Yarmulke who defrauded the government from.
It was a whole group of that. Yeah.
But it's not that they're necessarily a rabbi. Mm-hmm. It's just because.
Oh, they do.
They go after anybody who publicly is known to be a religious
Christian
who is caught doing anything
they
shouldn't.
Love it.
They love it. You'll see it all over the you know.
They love it.
I mean, yeah. There was an interesting analysis of this, which is that it's a remnant, again, not a justification, but that it's a remnant of the fact that in the old country, the Jews were so persecuted that they had no choice but to do things that were basically cheating to try to just to barely eke out a living. So that mentality of we're being persecuted, you know, we have a right, so to speak, to cheat the government when we can. So that's the attitude sort of carried over in certain communities. Again, it's an analysis of it, but it's not a justification. It's 100% usur and achil Hashem, and I paskin for all my congregants that you should not do it. And not that I would think that anybody would, but that's...
Let the record show that we were pretty confident that that was the case before you said that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Mitzvah reish tzadivav. The mitzvah 296, mitzvahs kiddush Hashem. Oh, we're going positive over here. The mitzvah to sanctify the name of God. Shinstavinu lekadesh es Hashem shenemar v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael, that I shall be sanctified amongst the children of Israel. Kolomar shenimzor nafshenu lamus al kio mitzvah sadas, we should give ourselves to be killed in order to fulfill certain mitzvahs of the religion. Uchvar beru zichron lebracha mepi haKabbalah umin haksuvim be'eze inyan of eze mitzvah nitzavinu b'zeh. So we have a tradition about exactly what are the parameters for when we're required to give up our lives and when we are not. You're going to tell me it's a Betharish Pasuk against this. We should never have to give up our lives for the sake of religious laws. Because it says in the Torah, V'chai Bahem, Asher Yaseh Usam Adam V'chai Bahem, that a person should live with the laws of the Torah and not die with the lies of the Torah. D'mashma V'lo Shiyamuz Bahem. That this does not apply in every situation and in every possible type of sin. In general, we say, Yavor Ve'al Yarig, that you're not allowed to give up your life in order to fulfill a mitzvah. And this is the source for the concept also of Pikuach Nefesh, that when it's a danger to life, so any mitzvah that are besides these three are set aside. If you have to eat on Yom Kippur, you're going to die. You eat on Yom Kippur. If somebody's bleeding to death and you have to drive the person to the hospital in order to get treatment on Shabbos, so then you're allowed to do that. That's in general, but there are situations where one is required to die rather than sin. He uses again the word chai, live, that our interpretation of the Torah depends on our received tradition from Chazal and not our own conjectures. If Herush Amru Zichronim Livracha, the sages tell us, Ki gimel mitzvos shehein shechayav ha'adam shehareg alein v'alyavur bahen la'olam, which are the mitzvos that one is never, ever, in any situation allowed to violate, rather than be killed. Avodah zara v'chol abizraha means worship of idols, other deities, and anything connected to it.
Was it allowed to make a statue? Never mind. Praying to a statue, are you allowed to make one?
So that might be included in Abizraha, that there's a big discussion in the Rishonim of exactly what is considered Yehoreg Ve'al Yavor. That the Sefer Achinas is going with this idea, that is the most famous approach to the sugya, which is that not only is actual worship of idols Asur, but anything that is connected to it, anything derived from it, any prohibition related to Avodah Zarah in any way, is considered to be Yehareg Val Yavor, right?
So making a statue would...
Again, within that, even within that Shita, so there's a machlokis about that, but according to some Shitas, yeah.
That's a separate prohibition of making a pestle.
Doesn't matter, it's part of Abizrayu Avodah Zarah. It's part of the category and accessories. And in modern Hebrew, this word is used to mean like an accessory. So anything that is connected to the mitzvah of Avodah Zarah is prohibited. Kilomar, kol inyan shelo ha'asur lanu mikoach halavin ha'miyusadim, but anything that's prohibited because of Avodah Zarah per se, is going to discuss later certain exceptions, what are not included in halavin ha'miyusadim ba, things are directly related to Avodah Zarah. Chosh nefarish lemata bezras Hashem, v'chein gilui arayos v'chol abizraha, that prohibited sexual relationships and all the abizraha of that as well. So again, so according in the Torah, you only receive the penalty of kares or whatever things if you actually have intercourse with the prohibited sexual relationship. But it's yehareg val yavor, even if you're going with this approach that Abizrael are also aser, that anything that's related to it, that if they say the goy tells you, here's a married woman, here's a gun in my hand, kiss her, or I'm going to shoot you. So you're required to submit to death rather than to do this lesser sin with a married woman, because part of Abizrayu, the Gilui Arayos. Even though if you did that, you wouldn't receive the penalty. Even if you did it willingly, you wouldn't receive the penalty of death or kares for such a thing. Nevertheless, it's part of the category. And the idea being that part of the idea that Arayos is Yeharik Valyavor is that you shouldn't get a taste in your mouth for doing this this sin. So if somebody says, here, you know, do something, do a sexual act with this woman that, or man, also Yaharik Valyavor Pashtas, for a man to, if Bishkav Zachar is Yaharik Valyavor also. So you do this thing, and if not, we're going to kill you. So you say, okay, you know, I'm not gonna, I'll do it, okay. And then you do it, and you say, I did it. No lightning bolt. No, that wasn't so bad. You know, I've never even thought about doing something like this in my life before, but you know what? I kind of enjoyed it. Maybe I'll do it again. So again, that's not the only reason, but part of the thinking for why Arayos is Yaharik Valyavor is for this reason. Ushvichas damim, and murder. Says, bow down to this idol, or I'm going to kill you. So you're supposed to get killed. You're going to tell me, wait a minute, why on earth should this be Yeharik Valyavor? You stand there, here's an idol of Zeus, and the person says, you know, bow down to Zeus, or I'm gonna kill you. So you say, okay, like I don't really believe in Zeus. I don't believe in this idol. So if I bow down, so I just have in mind that I'm you know, bending. I don't have in mind that I'm actually bowing to this. Right. Yeah. So why should I be killed because of this? Yeah, I'm not really worshiping Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, it's Yaharik Valyavor, because every Avodah Zarah could be interpreted as, we don't really believe it, but you're doing it anyway because he's threatening you with death. You should not even give the impression that you're worshipping idols instead of God. Yeah?
So I was once in the Japanese garden in California, and young man who had been brought up in Japan, who spoke Japanese, was able to read all the whatever the scripts fit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as we were passing a statue of the Buddha, he said, "Don't bend down to tie your shoelaces here, because you would be bowing down to an idol." Now, would you say that that's included?
Yeah. No, I mean,
not easy.
Well, no, because yes, if somebody said, "Here, bow down, bend down now to tie your shoelaces," and I want you to do it in front of this statue, because
but if I had just,
you wouldn't be subject to the death penalty, no, because I have to be bemazed. So the death penalty is bemazed, that they would tell you, you know, here, what are you doing? You're about to bend down in front of the statue of Buddha, and you would say, "Oh no, I don't really want to do that." So then there wouldn't be a death penalty. And if, you know, God knows what's in your head, so it wouldn't be, if you bent down to tie your shoes, there wouldn't be a penalty of kares. But you're still not supposed to do that, even if it's not.
I understand. I was
right.
Just curious.
No. But if somebody did threaten you with death unless you bent down to tie your shoes in front of the statue of Buddha, because they
exactly.
Yeah, so you have to submit to death. Yeah. Okay. Veloshon Sifri, Amenaske Notzesi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim. Because of this, I took you out of the land of Egypt. Shetakdishu Hashemi Barabim. The point of the Jewish people is to sanctify God's name on earth. So if we don't do that, so that's sort of a violation of the condition upon which He took us out of Egypt. So not just for idolatry, but for Gilui Arayos and Shvichas Domim, you have to submit to death. Shorish mitzvah zo yadua ki adam lo nivra rak lavod baru, that the point of our life is to serve God and not just enjoy. We can enjoy too, but it's more significant than that. Umisheino moser gufa avodas adonav einenu eved tov. You're not a good slave if you're not willing to die for the master. Imagine a secret service agent. We're God's secret service agents, and he's the president, Lahavdil. So if the secret service agent is not willing to take a bullet for the president, so he's not a very good secret service agent. His whole point is to protect the honor and the life of the president. So we have to act with God in the same way, that if something affects God's honor, so we have to take the bullet. So people give up their lives for their masters. So certainly this would apply to God as well. What does it say? So these three averos, you're required to give up your life rather than violate in any way, shape, or form. Bein b'shashmat, o shelo b'shashmat. Even if there is no religious persecution whatsoever, let's say you're happily living here in your apartment in New York City, and all of a sudden a non-Jew comes in. The non-Jew, you're private, just the two of you in the apartment. The non-Jew says, right now, I have this little idol in my pocket, and I want you to bow down, or I'm going to kill you. There's no video cameras. He's not recording with his smartphone. No video cameras. No one's ever going to find out about it. It's just between the two of you. You don't really believe in idols. Nevertheless, there's no religious persecution. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to do it. You're required to die rather than violate this prohibition. Uvein v'parhesya v'afilu b'tzina, whether it's in public or even in private. Maybe the non-Jew didn't even say, I want you to bow down to my idol because I get a kick out of Jews abandoning their religion. But maybe he says, I have an idol here, and I really like you. My shoe has an idol on it, and I really like you to tie my shoe, and thereby you'll be worshiping my idol, but I'm going to kill you unless you tie my shoe right now. In other words, the non-Jew's getting something out of it for himself. It's not just to do something bad to the Jew. So in that situation, you'd also be required to give up your life. Aval bishara verus amru d'shalo b'shasashmad uvitzina Yavor Valyehari. But if these two conditions are the opposite, if it's in private and there's no shmad, then you are not required to give up your life for other sins besides the big these big three. Even if you're in private, and the non-Jew says, let's say on Shabbos, he says, there are two ways of doing it. Either he says, it's Shabbos now, and I really would like you to plow my field. And my field needs a good plowing. Jew, plow my field, or I'm going to kill you. So you're not required to give up your life. You plow the field. But there's a difference in that. If there are people around, and you have several Jews, Jews around, and the non-Jew says, plow my field. I want you to violate Shabbos. So plow my field right now. I'm going to kill you. So in such a situation, that would be a lack of Kiddush Hashem to violate the prohibition, and you would be required to give up your life. But that's the distinction I just explained. Whether if you're in public in front of 10 Jews, whether the non-Jew wants you to do it for the sake of causing you to violate the mitzvah or not. But if it's b'shas hashmad, if everybody knows that there's religious persecution of Jews right now and the Jews really have to stand up for their principles, so on any mitzvah, there is Yehari Galyavar, he's about to explain. V'shas hashmad, if there's religious persecution, afilu b'tzina v'afilu lanoso afilu mitzvah kala Yehari Galyavar. Even in private, and even if it's for the non-Jew's own benefit, and even the tiniest type of mitzvah, you have to give up your life. U'mitzvah kala hi ke'ein mash amr zichron levracha afilu ha'arkesa dimisana. Shoelace. What's a shoelace? And what's the significance? Kilomar shelo yasa ha'yisrael tzuras min olo kemo ha'goyim ha'ovdem avodazara shel yidme lios ovei avodazara kem. Even if it doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that such a thing is prohibited, but it's a Jewish thing. There's a known that in this area, the Jews tie their shoelaces with black shoelaces, Jews with black shoelaces, and the non-Jews use red shoelaces, or the Jews do it in a more modest way somehow of lacing up their shoes than the non-Jews. There's a distinctive Jewish way of tying your shoes, and a distinctive Goyish way of tying your shoes. So it's Shas HaShmad, a time of where the government is really cracking down on Jewish religious observance. The non-Jew breaks into your house, even if it's in private, and says, Jew, Goyish HaShulais, now, or I'm going to kill you. So you're required to submit to death rather than tie your shoes in the Goyisha fashion, because all these are considered, this would be considered a major Chilul Hashem if you would submit to this, because it shows your lack of regard for God's, for the distinctiveness of the Jewish people and for the honor of God if you would do it in this way. But in general, if there's no Shmad, then if a non-Jew breaks into your house and says, You know, tie your shoelaces in the Goyish way or kill you. So go ahead and tie your shoelaces in the Goyish way.
Fight another day.
Yeah. So what's like Avodah Zarah? Ha'inyan hu lomar. Kol ma shenes arlanu mikol lav hamiyuchad b'avodah zarah. Anything that's specifically geared towards avodah zarah. Chim ha'shomer b'pesach risho nemasech ha'sochem. B'kol misrapin b'mokom sakona chutz me'atzei asherah. Let's say you have a life-threatening illness, and the only way to cure yourself is with some sort of medicine that's derived from the bark of a tree that's an asherah, that's used for idolatry. The Amra La Bayrushami, the Tama Yirushami said Losov Davarsha Bishamar La Rofe Haveli Alin Shall Ashera Plonis. Maybe if you go to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, I know how to cure this illness. Look, I have an Ashera in the backyard. So nurse, please go get me some from the bark of the Ashera tree. The Ashera, make sure it's the Ashera so I can cure this Jew. So that for sure would not be allowed. The mitzvah command the modeva, because it appears that the Jew is acknowledging the power of the Asherah tree supernaturally. Ela filu amar lo aveli alin shel ilan ploni stam. Even if the doctor said, oh, you see the oak tree in the back? The nurse says, you mean the one that's the Asherah? It doesn't matter. Just get an oak tree. Go the oak tree in the back. So get me the medicine from the oak tree, please.
Would that be okay?
Oh, the halach velo matzel ashera yehari galayavar. The nurse goes in the backyard and says, well, the only oak tree is here is an ashera, so I gotta take from the ashera. So then, even in such a situation, you're not allowed to cure yourself with the ashera, even though you're not worshipping the idols directly, or the foreign deities. But it looks as if you're acknowledging the power of the ashera tree, and you'd not be allowed to use it even to cure yourself from a life-threatening illness. You're not worshipping the Yatzei Asherah at all. You're just letting the doctor cure you with the Asherah. Ela mikol makom demishani mina v'ika b'milsa lav de lo yidbak b'yodcha miuma min acherem. You're not allowed to derive hanoah from Avodah Zarah in any way. And nothing from the cherem is like the spoils, the consecrated spoils, the forbidden spoils. You're not allowed to derive hanoah from that. That's from the Avodah Zarah. A little bit, but we'll see that this is not necessarily everybody agrees to the way we just presented it.